I'm going to put that on just so that I've got notes of what we're talking about. So thanks very much for showing me that, for sending me your CV and everything. And the idea of coming today was really find out a lot more about the advisor side of the role, I think, and the role with SEAC and SCAR and then QCA.
Mm.
So a lot of involvement in the national developments with history.
Mm. Not only with history, national curriculum, but also GCSE.
Right, before that, in 1980,
I would argue probably have more impact than national curriculum on what was taught. So it's an interesting thesis.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
When you consider GCSE is still there.
Yeah.
And has been going now since, what, 1988?
Yes. It was first examined that year, wasn't it? Started teaching 1986. So, but obviously in gestation from the early 80s, presumably people were doing things.
I was doing joint O-level CSE chief examining in 1986.
Yeah.
I've got some papers that I did as well.
Oh, right. That'd be nice, nice to have a look at,
And because SEAC or SEC before it, I joined SEC, which was Secondary Examinations Council.
Yeah.
Which had grown out of the Schools Council. Quangos off.
They scrapped that Schools Council in 1984, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
But then the Schools Examination Council
was kind of born out of it, very much to look at the development of public examinations, particularly GCSE.
And was that because the minister knew that they wanted to change to GCSE and they needed an exams authority?
I think it was because they wanted somebody to regulate the what was then quite a lot of examination boards, because you had four or five big O-level boards and then you had regional CSE boards.
Yeah, the old LEAG and NEAB, those and sort of things.
SUJB was Southern University Joint Board. There was... it was before LEAG. That was an amalgamation of the O-level and CSE boards.
Right.
It was the London Examination Board was the CSE board and East Anglian board. And so there were quite a lot of examination boards, all producing examinations with very little regulation.
Why do you think it was thought that there needed to be regulation? Because they were very similar, those exams, weren't they?
They were. I think it was Sir Keith Joseph who had the idea of bringing in a common examination that would replace O-level and CSE. And I think the proliferation of examinations was becoming worrying. There was also the feeling that a lot of people were being denied achievement because CSE capped their achievement. I certainly was one of the people who thought that the problem with the CSE was that unless you got a grade one CSE, it really didn't count for very much. So it was a kind of sop for less able. And so the idea of a single examination grew in momentum. But along with that also grew the idea of having criteria that define that examination in a much more overt way than had gone before. If you talk to Eric Evans about O-level history, he will tell you that, you know, besides saying that, well, this exam covers 1815 to 1940, which is the one that I was taught and the one that I taught when I started teaching. I've got a textbook in there that I did it from. That was it.
Yeah.
But the big breakthrough was the creation of GCSE criteria. And, you know, picking up on the seminar you did about the significance of schools history project, what I think is quite interesting is the way you see the objectives of the school history project reflected in those first GCSE criteria.
But some of it, presumably, came from the marking of CSE. Was that not governed by more criteria than O-level?
Not to my knowledge.
It was just as bland and as bare.
As periods of history.
Well, how were the school, the Mode 3 CSEs moderated then?
Mode 3 CSEs, I think, were moderated against their own aims and objectives, and presumably, I wrote a Mode 3, a London Studies Mode 3. I have very little memory of doing that, against what criteria I wrote it, besides the fact that I set out periods of study and objectives and such like. And I don't really know, because I wasn't at that point involved in the kind of other side of things, how it got approval from...
And even the grading of CSE Because there had never been any attempt to match up grade one with
O-level
and check that there was any.
And that was why when we moved into joint O-level CSE in that period 1986 to 1988, in the kind of run-up to GCSE, it did become very interesting. I'd been working as a school's history project examiner for Southern University Joint Board, so it was very much in the O-level tradition. And I taught in a grammar school, and then the school had become a comprehensive, like most schools in London.
Mm.
Chris Culpin, who was the other person who became a chief examiner for joint O-level CSE, came from the CSE tradition. He'd been working in CSE. And so by appointing two chief examiners, one of whom came from the O-level tradition, if you like, and one of whom came from the CSE tradition, the aim was to bring the best of both together.
Mm.
And so Chris and I learned a tremendous amount from Chris Culpin, both in terms of how to work with teachers, because I'd never done that. I was a teacher, and I'd never had to work with teachers or teach teachers, for that matter. So Chris was just amazing. But he also had ways of setting questions that made me think, oh, well, you know, it's all about accessibility, making questions accessible. And one of my future arguments was that, you know, accessibility applies whether you're talking about a genius or the less able. The question has still got to be accessible.
Some people, I mean, currently there have been quite a lot of criticism from some of my interviewees about the difficulty of achieving that, and the fact that they don't feel that the current GCSE is as accessible as it needs to be.
Mm.
So it's quite a challenge, isn't it, to make something accessible across the full ability range.
Yeah, well, and in the big debate in the 1980s, and my first involvement with SEC when I was still teaching, before I joined SEC, was in the issue of whether, in fact, you could differentiate by outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a document there that was produced by SEC, well, SEAC as it was in 1988, but it was developed by SEC, which is about whether differentiation by outcome in history was feasible. And differentiation by outcome is what we've been using in joint O-level CSE. And effectively, it was trying to establish from a response, a level of response, and mark that response. And that very much tied it into the concepts rather than ticking a mark for a fact. So you were looking, if your question was about cause, you probably have several levels of response, which were going from kind of somebody who said, well, it happened because it happened, to it happened because there were multiple factors which operated on each other in a different way. So,
but actually, if you look at GCSE papers, there's quite a number of questions that are, you know, describe 10 of the following, you know, and it gives a list. So,
and those, in some cases, would be justified as access questions. So you start a series of questions with a question that lets people in. And I can show you that in some of the joint O-level CSE papers that we did.
Oh, that'd be interesting, yeah.
Do you want to look at those now?
Yeah, I would, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great, thanks.